This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
It is time for Cravings, of course. It's your Saturday afternoon food and drink special, so it's time to pop yourself in your comfy chair, open a bottle of wine, kick off your scuffs, because you're going to meet some really interesting folk today. How does a blonde-haired, blue-eyed German boy become obsessed with Thai food and become one of the best in the country? You'll meet him and find out. We're also going to send you off to an Italian cooking school, a woman that's learnt from her mother, and it's all been handed down. And you will also get to meet the very delicious, very handsome Tyson Stelzer, who not only is a wine writer and an author, he's pretty much everything else. There's not much that Tyson doesn't know about wine. We know that he's at a wedding somewhere, so we're going to hope for a bit of divine intervention as we speak to Tyson a little later in the program. But first, of course, it's time for the foodie news. October 6 is when you can start buying tickets for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. That's in a couple of weeks, but we know that David Chang, who is from Momofuku Restaurants around the world, is the first announcement for next year's international lineup. This guy is he's a self-confessed badass Korean-American chef. He has noodle bars and all sorts of things, and he's one of seven US stars who are lined up to join us this year for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival Masterclasses. These do sell out quick, so I would advise the event's on 21 March next year, but tickets, like I said, go on sale October 6. On October 8, probably one of the most anticipated movies for foodie folk is released in Australia. It's called Julie and Julia. The stars of that particular film are, in fact, Meryl Streep and Amy Adams. Now, there's already discussion around Meryl Streep getting an Oscar for this. It's based on a true story. You can get a little Julie and Julia recipe book as well. Has nothing to do with the MasterChef program, of course. But that film opens October 8, and it's surely going to be worth a good look if you like food. Match Bar and Grill has appointed their new head chef as they head into their first birthday celebrations. For those that don't know, Match is on Swanston Street, Little Lonsdale Street corner, across from the City Library. So it's certainly worth a look if you can get down there. And the Australian Leisure and Hospitality Group has reported to have paid $19 million for a St Albans hotel in Melbourne's northwest. This only signifies to me that there's going to be some movement, of course, in the way that pub grub is treated in and around Melbourne suburbs. And finally, Melbourne will soon be home to six art-themed hotels following the arrival of an independent luxury hotel group, the Art Series Hotel. Each hotel will be named and inspired by famous Australian artists including Adam Cullen, John Olsen and Charles Blackman. The hotels will be located in attractive locations near the CBD, as we're told, St Kilda Road, Prahran, South Yarra, and they're all scheduled for completion before the end of 2011. The first hotel to be open will be the Cullen, which will be located on our very favourite street, the Commercial Road in Prahran. Yes, on Joy 94.9, this is Cravings. My name is Pete Dillon. I'd like to put an image in your head. I want to know, what is the image when you think of quality Thai food? I'm sure you're not immediately conjuring up an image of a strappingly good-looking, blue-eyed, blonde-haired, German-born boy who hails from Queensland. Me either, but don't be surprised, because whilst it's not an association that springs readily to mind, it is a testament to Australia's diversity, and we have that very good-looking, blue-eyed, blonde-haired, German-born boy on the phone. Martin Boats, welcome to Cravings.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
That's all right. I'm surprised we haven't had you on already. This show's been going for long enough, and I can't believe we haven't had you here.
And I do listen to Joy in my van in Melbourne all the time when I'm there.
So. Excellent. And we need to explain that you're not always in Melbourne, because you are the executive chef of Long Grain in both Melbourne and Sydney.
Yes, so we've got Surry Hills Long Grain, which is the original, and then we've got Long Grain in Little Bourke Street.
And for those who haven't been, what can they expect? It's one of these fun shared dining sort of experiences, isn't it?
It is. But in Melbourne, we've changed the philosophy a little bit. We've got round tables in the middle of the restaurant that seat 8 or 12. And so you can book those. And then we've got three communal dining tables and come in and first in, best dressed with those. So you can, and then you can make new friends on either side of you and check out what they're eating and have a bit of a interaction with other people as well, which is, you know, what dining should be all about. It should be interaction with everyone, not just twos or fours, or, you know, it's a bit of fun.
That's it. Now, look, last time I spoke to you on Joy was probably a couple of years ago. You were saying to me then that you thought you were going to move to Melbourne, find a nice young man and get married. How's that going?
Well, it didn't happen. I still live in Sydney and I'm still single.
So you're living in the wrong town.
I must be. I've actually just come away, come back from holidays, and I've been actually in Greece for the last few weeks in Mykonos, and that was pretty good.
I can imagine. I imagine your dance card would
have quite a few husbands there.
Yeah, your dance card would have been full over there. The voice you can hear is Marty Boats. He is the executive chef of Long Grain Melbourne and Sydney. Now, I want to talk about this journey that you've been on, because I want to know how a young fellow born in Germany and who starts his apprenticeship in Queensland happens to become one of our best recognised Thai chefs.
Well, I mean, after I'd finished my apprenticeship when I was 19, I went and lived in Germany for a little while, back with my family, and then I was soon called into the army after registering to work, so I then packed my little bags and fled to London and worked there for a few years. And when I came back to live in Australia, I moved to Sydney and heard about David Thompson and was very interested in cooking Thai food. I've always had a bit of a passion for Asian food and the flavours, so I went and worked with him as work experience for quite a while, and then he offered me a job in his kitchen, and I spent 8 years with Darley Street Thai and Sailor's Thai in Sydney.
Now, if for those that don't know, sorry, Marty, I had to jump in, but we probably need to explain the impact that David Thompson has
David Thompson is, well, sort of a world authority on Thai cuisine, has documented it in one large cookbook, which is called Thai Food, and he's about to launch a new book called Thai Street Food and Market Food, which will be out in October, and that will be another compendium of research that he's done throughout Thailand to actually note street food and market food in the whole of the country. Now, Thais don't actually write down their recipes. They just sort of pass them on and talk about them, and every Thai recipe is different, whether it be a green curry, a red curry, or a salad or whatever, and everyone makes them according to how, you know, their mothers have taught them or however it's been passed on to them, a lot like Italian cookery, really.
Well, it's interesting because a little later in the program we're going to speak to Sylvia Guccione, who in fact is not a chef but runs cooking schools here in Melbourne, and she's it's all the recipes and the ideas and that very sort of sensitive touch stuff that was passed down by her mum to her. And that's so much what food is about, isn't it? It's that sensory experience for
well, it's about your perception of it and my perception of, and Long Grain is my perception of Thai food, and it's the Thai food that I enjoy to eat. There's a lot of different types of Thai cuisine. There's some that, you know, uses a lot of fermented fish and is quite, you know, quite aromatic. And that's the type of Thai food that I'm not really into, but I do use fermented fish pastes and things, but it all blends in to balance the actual food out. Where in the northeastern part of Thailand, they eat a lot of insects. They eat a lot of fermented fish just on rice.
And spiders. Sorry, there's a bit of giggling going on in the studio here.
A bit of giggling in the background.
Yes,
I can just imagine what they're thinking about. And coming back to the question that you asked me, you know, why was I interested? I'm interested in the flavours. I love the, you know, the freshness of lemongrass and lime leaves and Thai basil. A lot of my food's got a lot of herbs in it. They're the sort of main reasons why I was brought in, and I like the balance of flavours. There's a lot of ingredients to form just a simple, a pad Thai, for example, it has not got tomato sauce in it, which a lot of people put in.
Yeah.
The reason why they put tomato sauce in the noodle dish, which it shouldn't have in it at all, is because the tomato sauce has got sugar, it's got acid, and that is the base of a pad Thai.
I was going to say, now, the premise of Thai food is four sort of sensory experiences. There's the sour, the salty, the spicy, and the sweet.
Salty, Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
And they all are put together to form a balance of flavours.
And that's why we love it so much. Marty, I want to ask you a question, apart from long grain, and I sort of want to do a bit of a comparison here to the Sin City and the Southern City. Before we do that, if you have a question for Martin Boats from long grain, I'm thinking David Thompson, you can SMS 0427 Joy 949. You can telephone 969-92949 and ask a question, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. There was a question I was going to ask you. It was about Sydney and Melbourne. Now, certainly in the inner west of Sydney and places like Newtown and over in the inner east, there's a plethora of Thai restaurants, and we don't seem to have that here. Apart from Long Grain and probably one or two others, we don't have good Thai food in Melbourne. Why is there the difference, do you think? Because you know both cities.
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, Thais probably have settled more in Sydney and in the northern part of this country. There's a lot of Thai people and Cambodian people that live in Darwin and Cairns, where I get a lot of my produce grown and sent down. And then in Melbourne, you've got a lot of Chinese and Vietnamese. So you walk down Victoria Street in Richmond, you've got the joy of going to the beautiful pho restaurants. And, I mean, I can get a lot of the ingredients down there, but some I have to actually bring down from North Queensland. So,
right. Yeah,
it's really, it's just where different people have settled. It's also a lot colder down in Victoria. So,
oh yes, we know.
Thai people love the more of a tropical tropical climate. So I think that's probably a reason. But there are a lot of Thai restaurants in this town.
There are having formerly inhabited the town for some time. Was cooking or was food something that was generational for you? Was it from your family
My family came to Australia after my grandparents came here after the war, and they either could settle in Victoria or Queensland, and they opted for Queensland. So I learnt a lot from my grandparents. They did, you know, the backyard garden and, you know, did all of that, you know, the potatoes and the full-on German food that we all love.
Cabbage.
And cabbage, yeah. And so that's sort of where my my roots stem from, and yeah, there was always a lot of cookery going on in the house that I grew up in.
Mm. Are you still? You're obviously still in business with Sam Christie.
Yep.
Excellent.
I am.
Sorry, you heard Sam Christie. You're listening to Martin Boats, who is here on Cravings in our. We like to call it the Cravings MasterChef Kitchen, but I don't really think we can because it's a radio studio. So how much time do you spend south and north? Obviously, with the two restaurants, it's got to be a bit of a challenge for you.
It has been a challenge. I've got two great teams in both restaurants. I spend Tuesdays and Wednesdays in Melbourne, and then the rest of my week, Monday, Thursday, Friday, I spend in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually doing a cooking class. I'm in the middle of a cooking class, but they're eating at the moment, so I've got this moment free.
Right. What are they eating in the cooking class? What have you taught them today?
Today we're they're having a fish dumpling broth, which they've had already, and they're doing having a hot and sour relish of fermented shrimp paste with green mango, and at the moment they're having a sour orange curry of Spanish mackerel.
Yeah. Do you do cooking classes in Melbourne as well as Sydney?
I do. I've got my next cooking class is it's a hands-on class at the Essential Ingredient in Prahran.
Right.
It's in October.
Can people find those details on your website?
They can find them on the website or just go to Essential Ingredients website and they will have me listed there.
And, of course, if you want to know the website here in Melbourne, it's www.longgrain.com/Melbourne. And that'll give you all the information on where you will find Long Grain and where you can find on Tuesday and Wednesday one very good-looking Martin Boats. Hey, listen, I've got to ask you about this little share house arrangement you have while you're in Melbourne. Is it still fun?
I have a great time. I live with
Miss Pearls from Madame Brussels.
From Madame Brussels.
and an occasional winemaker from the peninsula as well?
Yeah, and Kate Goodman.
From Punt Road Wines. I tell you what, next time you're down and there's a party going on, I so want to be in that house. For those of you who don't know Miss Pearl,
she's
a little bit outrageous, isn't she?
She is. And if you haven't been to Madame Brussels, do yourself a favour and get up there. And it's very gay.
They actually have...
Very cute in their short white...
I know. Trust me, it's one of my regular haunts. They do have a wine there, which is their very gay rosé, and it's labelled as such. Not a bad drop if you like a glass of pink. Hey, listen, mate, you've got to get back and teach some folks some more stuff, some curries and things. Promise me that if you're in Melbourne for a weekend, you will come in and sit with us and talk more about cookbooks and restaurants and helping you find a husband.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, if anyone hasn't been to Longrain, yeah, we're very gay-friendly.
Kel surprise. Longrain is at 44 Little Bourke Street in Melbourne. You can check out the website, www.longrain.com. If you're going to Sydney, you can log onto the Sydney site as well and have a look at what's on there. Martin, thank you so much for joining us. And
thanks,
mate, I hope to catch up with you very soon for a glass of wine.
Have a great weekend.
Good on you. That's Martin Boates, the executive chef from Longrain, both Melbourne and Sydney. And I tell you, he's not only a really decent bloke, he's quite a good-looking fellow too. So Tuesdays and Wednesdays, if you're on the hunt for a talented husband in the kitchen, he might be the man to look up. Robert has called. He said, the Astoria at Potts Point opened for about 8 months and then closed. Apparently the chairs were lovely, but the food was not so good. Robert, thank you for that snippet of information that I'm sure is going to make my next trip to Sydney somewhat different.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Yes, you're back with me, Pete Dillon, on Cravings on Joy 94.9. There is no greater thing than when a parent hands down a skill to a child. Now, that child doesn't necessarily need to be proficient or qualified in that area to be good at it. And we have one of those such people on the phone right now. Her name is Silvia Guccioni, and she runs, owns, operates, created the Pomodoro Cooking School. Good afternoon, Silvia, or should I say buongiorno?
Buongiorno, how are you?
Si bene, tu?
Bene, grazie.
Right, that's as far as we go with the Italian. Silvia, tell us a little about Pomodoro, because I've only, because of a friend of mine, recently discovered that you do these cooking schools, and we've had, over the last few weeks, a couple of listeners asking, where do we go to learn this? So it's great that we can have you on to talk about your Italian cooking school. Give us a bit of a quick précis.
Well, the business was established about 4 years ago, and the main aim of the business is really all about inspiring people to cook fantastic home-style Italian cuisine passed down from one generation to the next. And I've been privileged enough to learn a lot of recipes from my family, in particular my mother, and I really wanted to share the abundance that the Italian lifestyle can bring, the simple pleasures, the goodness of fresh produce, and present it in a social and relaxing atmosphere through the cooking school.
So you grew up in what, if correct me if I make some sweeping stereotypes here, but what is quite a typically migrant household where cooking and eating food was something that was ritualistic and obviously between generations with, I know, your nonna Giovanna and your mum Concetta, yeah?
That's exactly right. We grew up in a traditional Italian household. My family were born in Sicily and they migrated to Australia. So a lot of the things that we do in our family and a lot of the rituals that we have are pretty much featured around the food that we eat and the meals that we're going to prepare, whether it's on a weekday or on a weekend. And it really comes together in a much bigger way when we celebrate more traditional events as well. And it's really established around the women cooking the food together in the morning and preparing it for a celebration, which may happen in the afternoon.
And a lot of the, if I could say, Christian festivals are incredibly important as well in that there are days spent preparing food for the Easter celebrations, the Pasqua celebrations and the Christmas celebrations.
Absolutely. I mean, Easter is, for the Italians, marked as one of the most ceremonious activities on the Christian calendar, and I was fortunate enough to be there a couple of years ago around Easter time, and it all revolved around the celebrations and in particular the food that we ate. And the food that we ate pretty much spanned over a number of days rather than just being on Easter Sunday, and it went on for a couple of weeks. I sort of spent my time in Vizzini, in a little town in Sicily, with some family, and we ate and drank for many days over the Easter festivities. And then a week later I came back and participated in the ricotta festival, which lasted for 3 days, and it was all about celebrating one particular ingredient, which was beautiful fresh ricotta, which is absolutely amazing. I think it's fabulous.
Are you the only teacher at the school?
I'm not the only teacher. I have been teaching for the last 3 years, and the business started in my own home. So I've been having people over to my place for 3 years, and we've finally been able to move the cooking school to a professional kitchen, and I've been able and fortunate enough to have a few more teachers join the cooking school to teach their flavour of traditional Italian cuisine. So the teachers that we have in our school are people that have grown up in migrant households who love and appreciate traditional Italian cuisine and have the same natural flair of wanting to pass down traditional authentic recipes to the people that come to our school.
It's amazing, isn't it, to be able to learn and develop these skills, not by the traditional methods, like I'm a qualified chef. I went and did, you know, a four-year apprenticeship and learned with some terrific, terrifically talented people. But I come from a family where if it wasn't boiled or burned, it wasn't served. So it's I'm quite fond of this idea, I guess, of and it's quite nostalgic, I guess, in some ways, that there is this passing down of information through generations that sustains you and not just feeds your stomach but feeds your love and your passion and your association with family.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And there's always a story behind a recipe when you're learning about Italian food. And the story that goes along with the recipe is just as exciting as learning the recipe and enjoying the food in itself. And watching someone cook it is one of the most important things to remember when you're learning about Italian cooking. I remember many times ringing my grandmother or my auntie for a particular recipe and trying to make it that same day, and it would never work out. I would always have to go and sit with them, learn about the story, watch them do it, and then go away and practice myself, which is what the cooking school's all about.
You have to watch the way the nonna stirs the risotto.
You have to watch it, because they do these little things that they don't tell you, and it's not intentional. They just do it with their eyes shut, and you have to capture those little moments. And when I travelled in Italy, it was the same thing. You had to go and sit and watch these older people cook, because it will get lost over time.
Mm. The voice you can hear is that of Silvia Guccioni. She's the founder and operator of the Pomodoro Cooking School, Italian Cooking School, based in Bentley, I understand.
Yes, that's right. We're in Bayside, Melbourne. We're in Bentley.
Now, we were just talking to Martin Boats, who is the exec chef of Longgrain Sydney, Melbourne. He's a German-born boy who's got this extraordinary passion and understanding and knowledge of Thai food. And we had a similar discussion that there is, with Thai food, it's the same as Italian food is probably the same as Greek food and you know, pick a cuisine. There is such an understanding of sensory experience with food that's not anything that you could put into a recipe book.
That's absolutely right. When I watch my mum cook, it's interesting, and I remember at one time we were actually cooking a beautiful crema pasticcera, which is an Italian custard, and watching her cook that, she was tasting as she went along, and she changed the recipe as it went along.
Mm.
And it's all about tasting as you go, but also getting the freshest ingredients that you can find that are in season and complementing that at the same time.
Now, you also not only do these classes for the broad community, you do corporate cooking classes. I'm quite intrigued by this idea.
Yeah, we run cooking classes during the week. We run a lot of cooking classes on Saturday for the general consumers, and we're also running cooking classes on a Thursday night as well. But we have a great opportunity to offer to corporations team building cooking classes, and there's been a lot of interest over the last couple of years for corporates to sort of get their teams out of the traditional corporate environment and place them in a more relaxing atmosphere and give them the opportunity not only to learn a new skill but to interact with their work colleagues in a more socially conducive and relaxed environment.
It's all about the bonding, isn't it?
It's about the bonding, and it could be about, depending on what they want to get out of the cooking class, but it could just be a social activity. It could be that it's a new team that's come together and they want them to bond at a different level.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could just purely be for a celebration if at the end of quarter they've done a good job and you know, they're treating their staff to a fun and exciting experience. So we run cooking classes for corporations. They're typically hands-on to get people interacting together, and it always involves sitting down around a shared table and enjoying a beautiful meal with a glass of wine, which is what we all love to do.
Yes, some of us like us to do that for breakfast. Sylvia, as well as that, and this is the the really fun thing for me. You'll actually go to private, like deliver private classes, personalized cooking classes with menus tailored for social groups. So if someone's having a small intimate 40th in their house, you'll go in and tailor a menu, get everybody involved in the cooking, and then sit down and sort of share this experience with them. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. There's a lot of fun in doing private cooking classes, and what we do is we go to someone's house and we organise a specific menu for that particular group, and we get them involved in the preparation of that three-course meal. And it's still a very interactive cooking class. They're still learning something new, but they still get the opportunity to sit down with their friends and family and enjoy a beautiful, authentic Italian meal. So, and one of the joys of doing those classes is that everyone knows each other, and there's a lot of activity and talk and fun and champagne, and so it's highly interactive and a lot of fun. But still, at the end of the day, our aim is to teach them something authentic so they can go home and cook a few Italian meals.
Sylvia Guccioni is the voice you can hear, founder of the Pomodoro Italian Cooking School. Finally, Sylvia, I'm really intrigued by the Italian men's shed cooking classes. I think this is there's a huge movement across this country centered around men's sheds, and that they are places not for men to go and, if you'll pardon the expression, bitch about their wives and things, but it's an opportunity for men to gather and offload some of the psychological baggage we carry.
Yes.
And you've built a cooking class around this, which I think is just a sterling idea.
Yeah, the men's cooking classes are very popular, and running these cooking classes are, you know, one of my favourite jobs, because bringing men together to cook and enjoy each other's company and sort of, at the end of the day, try and teach them something new is fantastic. And when men come together, you'll find a group of men who are either not good cooks. There'll be a couple of men who are really good cooks, and most men just love eating good food. So the way to run a men's cooking class is to keep it highly interactive but not intimidating, and to let them all have a go and cook something.
Well, it's an area that we're traditionally, and I say traditionally, and again, I've used every possible stereotype I can today. We may as well use that one, that men are traditionally not geared to getting in the kitchen with other blokes and whacking together a meal.
That's right. And the trick is to not make it too complicated, but to teach them something quite impressive that they can then have the confidence to go home and cook themselves. And it could just be as simple as really nice pork and fennel sausages cooked in red wine.
Please don't get me started, because I'll be salivating.
Yeah.
Joel, I do have to go, because we've got to catch this fellow in Brisbane before he goes inside a church. I'll explain that later. Give us a plug for the website.
We're at www.pomodoro.net.au.
And there's a request thing there so people can go in and look at the different courses.
Yep.
Or if they indeed want something private, they can contact you.
That's correct.
Sylvia, thank you so much for joining us. Continued success, of course, with Pomodoro. And I reckon I might have to get one of these shed things going. I think it sounds like too much fun.
I'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much.
Good on you. Ciao.
Bye. Ciao.
That's Sylvia Guccioni. She is the founder of the Pomodoro Italian Cooking School based in Bentley. Go to the website and have a look. This is a really good idea. And again, if you're not confident in the kitchen, get a couple of your friends together, do a cooking class, and you'll be astounded at how it changes your life. Yes, Joy 94.9, you're on Cravings with me, Pete Dillon. We're talking food, we're talking booze. Standing outside a church somewhere, I think, in, or quite possibly Brisbane, it sounds like Brisbane, there's birds whistling, is a fellow that I'm a bit in awe of. He looks like he's about 12. He writes freelance articles for Wine Spectator, which is America's, Wine Spectator Decanter, Vintage Cellars. He's a judge. He's writes a book, and he writes another book. He's got about a dozen of them. He's just a bit of an overachiever for a man so young. He's a jolly good bloke, and we've got him on the phone. He's standing outside a church because he's at a wedding, and he's put that little bit of time aside to have a chat to us. Tyson, please welcome, Tyson Stelzer to Cravings on Joy 94.9. Hey, Tyson.
Hi, Pete. It's great to speak to you. Yeah, it's a crazy routine. I'm about to take photos for a friend's wedding. I landed from Adelaide 2 hours ago. I've been judging the Barossa Wine Show this week.
Yes.
So it's been a busy time, but really, really exciting.
I don't know how, you want to have one hell of a PA looking after you, because your life is just a little bit manic.
I wish I did. No, I'm my own PA and handle it all myself. But the wine industry at the moment is just such an exciting place to be that I don't want to miss a minute of it.
Well, it's going off as well. I mean, there is so much happening in the wine industry with new booze coming into the country. I could share you a little secret there, but we can't talk about that just yet.
Sure.
I've got sitting in my hand your latest offering, which is the Barossa Wine Traveller. And if I could sort of quickly, succinctly describe this, this is nothing short of a Bible. If you're heading to the Barossa in South Australia and you want to know where to go, you want to know what wineries are around, what's going to suit your palate, what's going to suit your time, your schedule, this would pretty much be the book to have, would it not?
We just wanted to try to capture what the Barossa is really on about. So most of the book is in first person from 150 wineries in the Barossa and the most important people in them, just sharing with us what the Barossa means to them, what's significant about their brands, but importantly too, what their favourite restaurants are, what their favourite accommodation places are, where they take the kids for the weekend, all those things, the inside secrets, if you like.
Mm. Which is something that we tend not to do with this sort of publication generally. We talk about the winery, the cellar door, who the winemaker is, where the grapes are grown, what sort of pH the soil is, but we don't sort of talk about this really sensible first-person idea of come here and you know, we'll tell you where the kid-friendly wineries are, we'll tell you, you know, the public places you can go to, where you'll find entertainment, all of that sort of stuff that we tend to miss.
Too much publicity is just marketing guff, and what ends up in books is just what the PR agents tell the authors. But what we did with this was we literally sat in the lounge room of Peter and Margaret Lehman for 3 hours and said to them, share with us your real story of what really happened in the 80s when you saved the Barossa from, you know, vines being pulled out. Tell us what happened in the 90s. Share with us why you're passionate about the Barossa now. And by doing that, we were able to see a different perspective on the Barossa, an inside perspective, a perspective that gives visitors a chance, in a way, to sit down in the lounge room of Peter and Margaret Lehman as well, which not everybody can do, of course, but just to really experience what these people are passionate about and what really drives them.
Tyson, why do we love the Barossa and why is it so important in the Australian wine landscape?
There's no other region that overseas is better recognised than the Barossa. It's not the oldest region in Australia as far as wine goes, and quality-wise there are many others that are doing a great job as well, of course, but there's something about the Barossa and its food culture, its history. It has maintained its Tudo-Germanic origins in terms of the lifestyle and the traditions.
Without wanting to sound vulgar, it's one hell of a place to get a good sausage.
Oh, it certainly is. Mm. I had dinner last night at Roaring Forties Cafe in the Barossa, which makes some of the best peach I've had in my life, and they do it because they just use all the local ingredients, and you can hardly get it wrong when you've got, you know, the best smoked meats and cheeses and other things like that. So that's another little secret that we like to share with people, where the best restaurants are, not necessarily the most expensive, but just the places that are authentic and that really represent what the community is all about.
Mm. Tyson, would I be preempting or making a being suggestive in the sense that this is probably not the first of these guides that are going to appear?
We've had so many wine regions coming to us and so many people from outside of the industry saying, you know, we'd love to have this on Margaret River, we'd love to have this on the Yarra Valley, on the Mornington, on the Hunter Valley and on 100 other regions.
Mm.
And it's a book that we've called it Barossa Wine Traveller quite deliberately so that we could then create, you know, Yarra Valley Wine Traveller, and we'd love to do that.
Mm. What about, and this is probably a really offbeat question and you'll be wondering where it came from, but what about somewhere like the Granite Belt in southern Queensland, which is not known as a wine producing area at all, but does in fact produce some sensible sort of wine?
Well, it's the nearest region to where I live myself. I ran this concept past people in Queensland Tourism some years ago, and they weren't at a point where they were happy to support it for whatever reasons, but I'm keen to do writing in the wine industry for the regions that the consumers most want to know about, and the regions that have the best stories for us to be able to tell. And you could say that of any wine region, of course, but the Barossa was the obvious one to start with, but I'd love to spend more time in Victoria. I know the regions well, and I know a lot of the key people in those regions well, and there's some great stories there that haven't yet been properly told, and wouldn't it be great to get them into print as well?
Mm. Tyson, how did you get to this point? Clearly you're a bit of an underachiever when it comes to your knowledge and ability to write about and share this wine experience. And like I said, you look like you're 12.
Thanks.
It's been a while since I saw you in the person, but this photo is it's a very flattering photo, might I say. How did you get to this point? I mean, you're only in your 30s?
Yeah, that's right. I'm in my early 30s. This is my 10th wine book that I've published myself. I write Taste, Food and Wine with Matthew Jukes from the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written other regional guides and some technical books as well.
Mm-hmm.
I love the wine industry. I love its people and I love their stories. And it's something that I spend a lot of time, have many sleepless nights just up late working. All my friends know to expect emails from me in the early hours of the morning because there's a lot to be done. And as a freelancer, it takes a lot of energy and without a huge amount of income often because the wine industry in Australia isn't large enough to really support writers with a lot of income, and that's fine. But it just means that there are little opportunities with some things that are unique. Like this, I think this guide is a bit different to other guides because it does try to tell those stories rather than just talking about the technicalities of the wine.
Mm.
And as you say, there's a place for more of that because Australian wine is not just about the places and it's not just about the wines, but it's about the people
and their
own stories.
And those people make up what is an incredibly diverse industry.
They certainly do. In the Barossa Guide, we've got 150 wineries, 150 different stories.
Mm.
And if you multiply that out across Australia, you probably end up with a number a bit like 3,000.
Yeah. I'm quite a fan of the Barossa. I love their red wines. They're known for them. I'm still sort of trying to get to how you got there. What your family, were they wine folk? Were you brought up knowing about wine as a young person? Or is this
no, not at all. I really only became excited about wine as I was finishing university and starting working. I studied science at university, and my wife's aunt and uncle were living in the Barossa and working at Bethany Wines.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very hospitable people and welcomed us into their home for holidays and showed us around the Barossa. And I gradually fell in love with wine in the Barossa originally and have since enjoyed it all around the world, of course. But it's been that hospitality and that generosity of that family, the Schrapples in the Barossa, and 100 others like them who we've got to know since then, that has really made me passionate about the Australian wine story and having a chance to share that with other people who don't always have the opportunity to be welcomed into the homes of these people but would love to visit the cellar or even just to go down to the local Dan Murphy's and buy a bottle of Peter Lehman Riesling and enjoy it at home.
Mate, you also put out The Juice 2008 and in 2009. Can we expect The Juice 2010?
Well, my book's called Taste, Taste 2009.
Oh, sorry, Taste.
That's right. 2010 edition will be an electronic version, which we'll be putting out next year, and then hopefully another printed edition in 2011. Unfortunately, because I self-publish, I can't keep up with doing more than a couple of books a year.
Mm.
I'd love to, but
gets a bit expensive
at the moment.
Anyway. Mate, grab your camera, pop inside, and take some photos at the wedding. Thank you. Giving up the time that you have to talk to us. And
it's a pleasure. And just one last tip. The
yep.
Barossa Wine Show this week, judging there, the highlights to look out for are 2009 Rieslings from the Eden Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And the wine of the show was a Cabernet Shiraz blend. And good on the old Australian Cabernet Shiraz blends. The Cabernets are popular, the Shiraz is popular, but in the market, the blends perhaps not so much so. But that was the standout wine of the show.
Who made it?
Surprising. That particular wine was made by Yolumba. It's the Reserve, which is one of their top wines. But the whole class of Cabernet Shiraz blends was one of the strongest in the show. And consumers miss out because they often overlook those wines on the shelves. But that's the inside tip at the moment.
Look, there you go.
Cabernet Shiraz blends.
Straight from the horse's mouth, as they say. Tyson, thank you so much for joining us. And next in Melbourne, do give us a buzz and we'll get you in to have a bit of a longer chat with us.
Love to do that. We'll have a glass of wine together.
That sounds like a smashing idea. Good on you. That's Tyson Stelzer, author with Grant Dodd of the Barossa Wine Traveller and a whole bunch of other books. Seriously, do a bit of research about this guy because he's, for somebody who self-publishes the amount of books that he does and does the work that he does, he's smart, he's relevant, he takes a whole bunch of the smelly, stuck-up sort of wine guy nonsense out of this and makes it really real and really easy. Cravings with me, Pete Dillon, on Joy 94.9.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air.
head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.